KPBS On Demand is supported by the San Diego County Toyota Dealers, presenting a new 2025 Tundra designed to combine performance and comfort with up to 437 horsepower and 10-speed automatic transmission. See your Toyota dealer, the San Diego County Toyota Dealers. We make it easy.
It's time for KPBS Midday Edition. On today's arts show, we hear about San Diego Black Pride, which kicks off tomorrow. I'm Andrew Bowen, in for Jade Hindman, with conversations that keep you informed, inspired, and make you think. San Diego Black Pride celebrates Black joy and Black queerness in an upcoming festival.
What a great gift to ourselves and to those who came before us to, like, be 10 toes down committed to celebrating ourselves and our joy in any space we're in.
Then, summer means Shakespeare in San Diego. Our midday movies critics share their favorite Shakespearean film adaptations. That's ahead on Midday Edition. Tomorrow is the kickoff of the 5th annual San Diego Black Pride Festival. The 3-day event is a celebration of Black queerness and joy in San Diego. San Diego Black Pride is dedicated to building safe and affirming spaces for Black LGBTQ plus people across the San Diego region. And here to talk more about the festival is president of San Diego Black Pride, Jordan Daniels. Jordan, welcome to Midday Edition.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here. If you can always do intros, that'd be amazing.
Every time this Jordan enters the room, we give an introduction.
So much better when you do it than when I do it. So thank you.
So walk us through some of the history behind San Diego Black Pride. How did this organization get started?
Yeah, so we've been a nonprofit for about 5 years. We began originally as a project of another organization, like a fiscally sponsored project. We began originally doing programming just focused on Black queer men. And then we became the San Diego Black LGBTQ Coalition. And from that work, we decided to really branch out and really serve all genders and all backgrounds of the Black queer and trans experience in San Diego. I joined the board in 2019, like right at the end of the year, beginning of the pandemic. I came on as their communications chair when it was still the coalition and we were a fiscally sponsored project. And quickly, we had to pivot quite a bit because obviously in January 2020, we had a lot of ideas what we're going to do for the year. That changed because the pandemic happened and so we shifted to a lot of virtual stuff. And my communications work really focused on what our messaging would be, how do we do community town halls online to figure out what our community wants and needs from us, but also knowing that our needs are shifting so much when this pandemic than when it's in real life. And we became a nonprofit 501c3 in 2021. We shift sponsors to the center in San Diego, the LGBT Center, and they, part of the partnership was that they actually paid for our legal fees to become a 501c3, which is really amazing. So I want to give them praise for that type of partnership. And then we rebranded as San Diego Black Pride in 2024. One, because the nomenclature of coalition was kind of misleading for people. People were like, who else are you working with? And the coalition was just us as queer, Black, and trans people, but not like a coalition of organizations. So it made more sense to just shift our name to one shift name out of coalition. Also, it's a mouthful to say, San Diego Black LGBTQ plus coalition. And I am a stutterer, so having to do multiple letters at one time just makes me like, what do I say? So San Diego Black Pride rolls off the tongue much better. And we officially became that in 2024.
So you do an annual festival. In addition, you also have several programs, including funds for Black LGBTQ plus youth, trans folk in San Diego. Tell me more about the work that you've led in this organization and why it's so important, especially now.
Yeah, so I'll give a little background to what our programs are. So we have the annual Black Pride Festival. This year, we branched out into doing more small and intimate programs, such as educational opportunities, so like financial literacy workshop, and then also a self-defense workshop. And then our funds really began with one of our previous presidents, Pamela Hollowell, who helped us start the Damon J. Shearer Scholarship Fund, which gives Black, queer, and trans students scholarships as they leave high school into university or even transfer from junior college to university who are based in San Diego. And then also helped launch our Trans Emergency Fund, which helps trans men, trans masculine, trans femme, trans women, get access and they need quick access to like hormone replacement therapy treatment, via money. Like, we're not providing the treatment. We are having access via, if they need dollars for it, a phone bill or housing support. And so Pamela really started those funds. We have paused them this year due to a lack of funding. As everyone knows, nonprofits are detrimentally hit by the shifts in administration. Whether the legal shifts impact us or not, it impacts our funders, and our funders are the ones that then control how much money they do or do not give us, or community funding. And so we're paused at present as we are an underfunded but mighty organization, and we're looking at ways to really reinstate those funds again. But we're looking at, you know, make sure we have money for scholarships and for the Trans Emergency Fund. I also say, while we may not have the fund, we actually have in certain instances, and I've done this, and our previous president, Anjali, did this as well too. There are trans folks who like really need emergency support. We do have a little bit of discretionary money to support them, which we have done, particularly this past year, which is helping folks access paying a bill on time for them, whether it was a part of the rent or supporting them with a bill payment for a cell phone or internet usage. Our other programs, like I said, are educational. So financial literacy was important for us, not to imply that Black queer and trans folks aren't financially literate, but to really ground ourselves in promoting self-sufficiency for our community, and knowing that financial literacy is important to any person, to any demographic, especially in a world where guerrilla terrorists are affecting us everywhere. It's a joke, but it's true. Like, where our economy is constantly shifting. So how can our community really get equipped with the tools, knowing full well that we face more discrimination in bank settings, in mortgage settings, and vice versa, and then self-defense, not because we want to support fighting anyway, but knowing that trans women especially face more chances of danger, physical violence, how can our community be equipped with the tools to de-escalate situations?
So what inspired you to step into this activism and get involved?
Yeah, so a little background about me. I'm a Black Jewish kid from the Bay Area, born and raised in East Bay. Shout out to East Bay if anyone's from there. And I grew up in a really multiracial place where everyone around me, especially on my street growing up, was a different culture. So my lens and viewpoint of diversity is so different than when I moved to San Diego. I originally moved to Oceanside in North County in 2012, after high school. I went to school at CSU Long Beach, Gale Beach. And then I moved back in 2018 after my dad passed away. My father passed away, but my father was Black, and so I feel like I had a bit of a disconnection from my Blackness when he passed away at first. I'm one of seven siblings, so I have six siblings up in the Bay on my dad's side. Very, very multicultural family as well, too. And when I moved back to Oceanside, I knew that I wanted to find more Black community. Long Beach had a really amazing Black community, a really strong queer community. I feel like I found myself and really articulated and sharpened my lens of activism there, what it means to be a Black queer person. And then when I moved here, I started working for Jewish organizations, so I found the completion of all my identities together, but I was still looking for, there was not a lot of Black spaces in North County, so how do I find that in San Diego, and where do I go? And so in early 2019, there was San Diego Pride held a mixer that was with all the BIPOC spaces. It was the Latina Coalition, CAPIMEDA, which was Asian, Pacific Islander, Desi American, Middle Eastern, and then the Black Coalition. And so I met them, and I was like, oh, I want to figure out how to join this, knowing that I will have to drive my happy self 50 miles every time to go do a program or experience there. And so I found them in 2019, and I went to a few meetings. It was there on weekends, thankfully. And then after 6 months of being in meetings, I was like, I wanted to try and be on a board position. My background's communication, so I knew it was a really quick fit. The president at the time, Damon Shear, who our scholarship is named after, actually, he reached out to me and was like, I think it'd be great to join us. And that's how I got involved.
So let's talk about the festival that's coming up this weekend. Yeah. You've got some really fun events lined up. What can you tell us?
Yeah, so we're really excited. It's going to be a big year. I'll first say our first 2 years were only one-day events. The past 3 years have been whole weekend events. This is our fifth year as a nonprofit and fifth year as our festival. So our theme is Fierce and Fearless at 5, which is also really timely because we know that we're in a time where people are fearing more to go outside and be their full selves. People are fearing showing up as their fullest queer and trans self, and also celebrating Black joy and Black experiences. And we centralize our Black experiences. So, festival, first I want to say, for anyone who wants to come, you don't have to be Black to come. Everyone's welcome. We want all folks, Black folks and allies, to come, Black and brown folks. We even want our cis and hetero allies as well, too, to come. As long as we all can center Black experiences, Black joy in that. Friday, we're doing a mini ball. So we become really known for doing balls.
And for the uninitiated, what is a ball?
Okay. So if you do not know what a ball is and you haven't watched the show Pose or the film Paris is Burning or the show Legendary that was on HBO, I will need you to do some digging on Google and find out. But basically a ball, how do I say this in like a brief way? It's a celebration, one, of like resistance and survival. Balls in the 20s, 40s, 50s, and 60s, especially 60s, 70s, and 80s, were a place where many Black and brown folks, and particularly Black and brown trans folks, who may not have experienced like life above ground, right? Because they're also like all underground in like a figurative way, get to come together and celebrate themselves in a safe space. Because as we know, public participation as a queer trans person back in those years was very little and very challenging to do without being criminalized or harassed by police. So the ballroom space, specifically for like this population of people, to dance, to have fun, to enjoy themselves, but to also like participate in categories. You have different categories. You walk categories. You can walk body. You can walk face. You can walk realness. If you're doing realness, it's like if you're a trans woman, will you pass in the world in this way? If you're walking executive realness, can you pass in your best CEO attire? And so we're known for our balls that we have done every year. We co-host some collaboration with different houses. This year, our ball is being hosted by the incredible Amber St. James, who is one of the best drag queens, one of the most like amazing drag queens in Hillcrest. There's actually so many amazing amazing queens in houses. We always love Strawberry Corn Cake as well, too. Those are two folks who do incredible work in our community. Amber's hosting this ball. It's the Legacy Ball, and it's going to be at Gossip Grill, which is one of our strongest partners, and that will be from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Really, you're coming to that if you want to know what it means to serve face, to serve body, to walk realness, to walk a category. If you want to know what it means to vogue down the house boots, if you want to like go and see a battle, go and see people like cheer on and go like work, yes, slay diva. That's what you'll come for that. Saturday is going to be our backroom rewind. It will be like a hip hop throwback night at Urban Moe's. It's a great place. Like it's like a lot of people go there on Sunday. So they have great drink specials, they have great food, they have amazing entertainment, but I feel like people haven't gone there much to dance, and we want to activate the space to be like the dancing spot, at least for a night of Black queer joy. So we're thinking like twerk offs, we're thinking like being sweaty and just like feeling amazing, and the energy be dripping with like Black joy and celebrations. So that's going to be a remote from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. So Sunday, a little controversy at present. So Sunday is our Sunset Cookout, which is our signature event, and we're really excited for it. We discovered that the venue we were working with didn't have the things it needed to host the event. We originally thought there was one issue that we were able to correct ourselves, then went to the city to like address the issue. Turns out that the issue was actually larger than that, and the venue wasn't forthcoming with us of what that was. And so now we are shifting our venue, which is actually working in our favor. So now we just confirmed that we'll be at Rich's on Sunday, which in some cases is actually like kind of a slay, because Rich's is a pinnacle of like the gay nightlife, the queer nightlife here in San Diego. They have so many events that happen. I also say Sunday is our biggest event because we have an array of headliners, performers, music artists, poets, and DJs, as well as all of our vendors come. So we're having a huge like vendor village that will be there. All events are going to be amazing and fun. You can find information for that on our Instagram, which is SDBlackPride. You can find us there.
Let's talk more about Black joy, which you said is really front and center for this festival this weekend. Why is it so important to prioritize joy in this moment?
So, it's a great question. I think, one, joy needs to be accessed. We're in a time where we're experiencing fear and danger and at heightened levels. And I'm not saying we need to access joy as a lens of like spiritual bypassing, because we don't believe in that. But joy in the sense of like, we're here regardless. Whether you try to vote us out, limit our rights, or limit our access to participating in the world or in society, we're here, we're going to show up and show out. And so it's important to access Black joy, because that is the core of who we are. I mean, Black folks, since, if you just think back to like, since the beginning of American history, which a country that we've helped build, despite being enslaved to do so and hurt and beat and killed to do so, we've still found spaces to find our joy and to share our joy. So, like, what a great testament of our resilience as a community of people. What a great gift to ourselves and to those who came before us to, like, be 10 toes down committed to celebrating ourselves and our joy in any space we're in. And also the joy to do it in Hillcrest, right? Hillcrest is the gay neighborhood, the queer space. It's also been a space that's historically been really white and, you know, and non-black in some cases, like really not black affirming, in some cases like black harming. And so we get to really shift the paradigm in, you know, in this area to say, this is a black space, we deserve to be here, celebrate ourselves and be as joyous and amazed and loud and fun as possible.
Well, the San Diego Black Pride Festival is happening this weekend, August 8th, 9th, and 10th. You can find more details at kpbs.org. I've been speaking with San Diego Black Pride President Jordan Daniels. And Jordan, thank you so much for joining us.
Andrew, thank you so much for having me. Thank you, KPBS, for having us and uplifting us and giving us a platform to share about our work. It is a huge gift. I love KPBS. I really love what y'all do or listen to a lot of your podcasts. So it means a lot to be here today. And thank you for your time.
Up next, culture, romance, and star-crossed lovers clash in Gold Coast Dilemma, the latest novel from author Nana Malone.
For them, in that kismet moment, they see like a, you know, a little star-crossed thing like, oh, I see you and you see me and this could be great. And then, you know, as the author, I make bad things happen to them.
Hear more when KPBS Midday Edition returns.
Hello, this is Dr. Michael Lalage, Medical Director and Chief of Staff for Kaiser Permanente San Diego. For more than 50 years, San Diegans have entrusted their health care to us. Our care and coverage connect to provide medical care tailored to each member. With our integrated network of primary and specialty care, we work together using evidence-based medicine to help deliver positive results. We believe in a healthy and engaged life with good beginnings and dignified endings. We believe that life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness requires total health, including equal access to high-quality, affordable health care. At Kaiser Permanente, our cause is health. Our passion is service. We work to help make lives better. To learn more, visit kp.org/San Diego.
Welcome back to Midday Edition. I'm Andrew Bowen, sitting in for Jade Hindman.
Brush up your Shakespeare. Start quoting him now. Brush up your Shakespeare. And the women you will wow. Just to claim a few lines from Othello, and they'll think you're a heck of a fella. If your blonde won't respond when you flatter her, tell her what pony told Cleopatra. And if still to be shocked she pretends well, just remind her that all's well that ends well. Brush up your Shakespeare, and they'll all kowtow.
That was a bit of Brush Up Your Shakespeare from the musical Kiss Me, Kate. Well, summer means Shakespeare in San Diego. The Old Globe just opened a production of The Comedy of Errors, inspired by a 90s soundtrack. And a new company called The Queen's Men is doing an all-female version of Julius Caesar. So that prompted our Midday Movies critics to create a list of some unconventional Shakespeare film adaptations. I'd once again like to welcome KPBS cinema junkie Beth Accomando and Movie Wallace podcaster Yasdeep Pithavala. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So we've had literally centuries to come up with all sorts of adaptations, reimaginations of Shakespeare's plays. What do you think are the ingredients for excellence in this very niche genre? Beth, why don't you start?
So I think the key is you have to have a vision. You can't be making it just because you want to do a Shakespeare adaptation or you think it's going to be financially beneficial. You have to know why you're doing it. What are the themes that attract you? Is Shakespeare something you've loved all your life? Do you want to make it accessible to a new audience? Do you feel there's a new reason to tackle Hamlet this year? So I think that's the key to make it work. And then from there, anything is possible.
Yeah, see, what do you think?
I love it when I watch a movie and I really like it, and then I find out much later that that was a Shakespeare adaptation. Mm-hmm. So I love it when a movie is so seamlessly integrated to a different time, and it still manages to kind of exemplify some of the themes from the original play, be it social commentary about class or gender or what have you.
I think most people know back in Shakespeare's times, all of these plays were performed exclusively by men. But as I mentioned in the intro, there is a new company doing all-female version of Julius Caesar. Beth, tell us more about The Queen's Men.
Sure. This is a brand new company performing at Trinity Theater. And there are a pair of 19-year-old women who are putting on a show. They have adapted Shakespeare's Julius Caesar to feature an all-female cast because they wanted to set it in contemporary times and in the world of women's soccer. So I'm going to have more about this next week, but it's kind of exciting, and I got to see a little bit of it, and it was quite intriguing.
And Yazdi, August 15th is Indian Independence Day, so good time to be thinking about Indian cinema. Give us a bit of background behind Indian Independence Day first.
Yes, so the Indian Independence Day, which happens on August 15th every year, it commemorates India's freedom from British rule in 1947. And it's important not to confuse it with another Indian holiday, which is the Indian Republic Day, which is also celebrated on January 26th every year, but that marks the adoption of the Indian Constitution for the first time, which happened in 1950.
So you have two Indian Shakespeare films to share with us today. The first is an adaptation of The Comedy of Errors. Tell us about this.
Yeah, so this is a movie from 1982, and it's a movie called Angoor or Grapes. And it is a pretty free adaptation of The Comedy of Errors, which, of course, is about two pairs of twins who get separated at birth and they come together and all kinds of chaos ensues. What I really like about this movie is that it takes its time to build the plot and then in the last half just descends into pure mayhem. And unlike kind of rather broad slapsticky humor, this movie kind of focuses on very wry dialogue, which is smart and clever. And, you know, it's not a very shouty movie. It's a very quiet movie, but the dialogue is so good and the actors are so stellar at what they're doing that you just burst into laughs all the time. And here's a clip from one of the musical numbers in the film.
And there are actually quite a few Indian adaptations of The Bard. Beth, tell us your favorite.
Sure. And since we're in a studio and not in a theater, I can freely say that Macbeth is my favorite Shakespeare play. There is a curse assigned to that name. But
that's right. We got to call it the Scottish play.
The Scottish play if you're in a theater, or else you have to like spin three times and find a virgin or something to do something. Anyway, Macbeth is this intense, lean, bloody play. I love it. And there are so many adaptations of it. In fact, all of my picks today are going to be variations on Macbeth. But there is an Indian version called Makbul, which is set in Mumbai. It's kind of a Mumbai noir film. It's set in the world of crime. It's a little slow to start, as one might expect. There are a lot of musical numbers in this, and here is one that kind of kicks it off. Once it dives into the meat of Macbeth, it picks up and it delivers a truly effective murder to set the whole plot in motion. And the film is great because it makes a cultural translation of the play. So we don't have this kind of British royal political maneuvering. Instead, there's a lot of family and melodrama, and Macbeth is kind of driven more by sexual desire or lust as opposed to ambition for power. But once it gets going, the murder itself is really well done, and the sense of how these murders haunt him and this visual theme of blood is played out so well in the film. And of course, you have Irfan Khan with those big sad eyes, and he's great as Magpul, who is manipulated by a sort of Lady Macbeth character. And again, it's more of a sexual temptation that he's taunted by as opposed to a strict play for power. But I really enjoyed this version of Macbeth.
And Beth, the filmmaker, Vishal Bhardwaj, who made Makbul, also did two other Indian adaptations of Shakespeare's plays, Omkara, which is an adaptation of Othello, and Haider, which is an adaptation of Hamlet, and they're all worth seeking out.
I want to do a series of Indian Shakespeare. Like,
yeah, it's a whole genre of itself, apparently.
Yes.
Well, Beth, I know you love your dark, bloody tragedies. Yazdi, you've got a cheerier Shakespeare option to share with us, and it's another comedy.
It is. It's the movie 10 Things I Hate About You, which came out in 1999. It's streaming on Hulu. Shockingly, it was the first feature from filmmaker Gil Junger, and it starred a string of baby-faced actors, including Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Heath Ledger, and Julia Stiles. I mean, you have to see them. They look like kids. I rewatched this movie just this week, and 25 years later, it still holds up remarkably well. The filmmaker takes a lot of liberty with the original Shakespeare script, but puts it within the context of a high school. And there's just enough touches that you can recognize it's a Shakespeare adaptation. The school is called Padua. The last name of the male lead is Verona, and it's Stratford for the two other girls. And it's a delightful little movie which holds up remarkably well. And if folks haven't seen it, they really ought to check it out. And here is a clip from the movie, which comes rather late, and it kind of explains the title for the movie.
I hate the way you talk to me and the way you cut your hair. I hate the way you drive my car. I hate it when you stare. I hate your big dumb combat boots and the way you read my mind. I hate you so much it makes me sick. It even makes me rhyme. I hate it. I hate the way you're always right. I hate it when you lie. I hate it when you make me laugh, even worse when you make me cry. I hate it when you're not around and the fact that you didn't call. But mostly I hate the way I don't hate you, not even close, not even a little bit, not even at all.
What a touching moment. Well, Beth, you actually have a funny adaptation of Macbeth that you want to highlight. What is this film?
Yes, I do. So this is a marvelous film called Scotland, PA, and it transfers the Scottish play to Scotland, Pennsylvania in the 1970s. And the power play is set in the world of fast food, and there's a white trash slacker who is egged on by his ambitious wife to overthrow the fast food king, Duncan. So with Macbeth, there are the golden arches of Macbeth in this fast food empire that they create. It's a really inventive, creative, fun, but it's also spot on in terms of the themes, this idea of ambition and a marital relationship and the intimacy of that. And there's some funny bits where, you know, the tomorrow and tomorrow speech is a self-help tape that plays out in a car.
Tomorrow is tomorrow. Tomorrow is not today. Today is who I am.
But you have Christopher Walken.
Lieutenant Macduff, I'm here to drop off my cards, which are on the coffee table next to my wife's baba ganoush.
And the witches are now hippy-dippy flower children.
It was foul.
The vow was foul?
It was foul.
And the fair was fair.
Foul's fair.
The fair is foul.
My ass hurts.
I don't think that one works.
Shh.
She's having a spell.
Oh, God, so dramatic.
And that was from Scotland, PA. Yazdi, I hear you have a zombie Shakespeare film to recommend. Tell us about this, please.
So God help us all. I am recommending a movie about zombies, but I really have a soft spot for Warm Bodies, which is an adaptation of Romeo and Juliet. It came out in 2013. and it's streaming on Amazon Prime. This is one of the movies where I watched it, I didn't even realize it was based on Romeo and Juliet, but it imagines Romeo as a zombie who is falling in love with a living girl.
What am I doing with my life? I'm so pale. I should get out more. I should eat better. My posture is terrible. I should stand up straighter. People would respect me more if I stood up straighter. What's wrong with me? I just want to connect. Why can't I connect with people? Oh, right. It's because I'm dead.
And Nicholas Hoult, yes, that Nicholas Hoult and Theresa Palmer are so well cast as the leads in this movie. There is even a serenading scene on the balcony from Romeo and Juliet. How can you not like it?
Oh my God. What are you doing here?
Came to see you.
You can't just do that. It's dangerous.
Regio, shut up. I'm trying to sleep.
Sorry. Jesus, R. Are you crazy? The people here, they're not like me. If they see you, you will get killed. Do you understand that?
I can just imagine what's on screen listening to that. Well, Beth, close us out here. You have one last Macbeth film that you want to share.
Yes, and so this is another foreign adaptation. This is Kurosawa's epic Throne of Blood, and here's a little bit of the music to kind of set the tone for the film. As with Macbeth, this is a cultural translation rather than just a literal one. And a key thing has to do with the end. And spoiler alert, if you're not aware of how Macbeth ends, it ends badly for our title character. But in England, beheading was a sign of disgrace. And so that's how they choose to end Macbeth's life. And in Kurosawa's film, that doesn't translate exactly the same. So there is a scene at the end where he dies in battle with arrows, and that is considered more of a disgrace than a beheading would have been. So what's particularly effective in this film, I think, is Kurosawa's take on the supernatural. So Macbeth is famous for its witches, and Macbeth is haunted by these ghosts, and Kurosawa handles that really well. And I think what this shows is how kind of malleable Shakespeare is and how universal his themes are. The things he talks about in terms of power and love and ambition and greed and all these things are so fundamental to human nature that they can play out anywhere. And I just love how people can tackle this in so many different ways, and each one of those succeeds in different ways and kind of highlights different aspects of the play. And as someone who loves Shakespeare, I just adore seeing this kind of diversity.
Well, I want to thank our Midday Movies critics for their unconventional Shakespeare recommendations. I've been speaking with KPBS cinema junkie Beth Accomando and MovieWalla's Yazdi Pathavala. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Andrew.
And let's go out with a little bit more of Brush Up Your Shakespeare from the musical Kiss Me, Kate.
Brush up your Shakespeare. Start quoting him now. Brush up your Shakespeare and the women you will wow.
If your girl is a Washington Heights dream,
treat the kid to a Midsummer's Night's Dream. If she then wants an all by herself night,
let her rest every 11th or 12th night. If because of your heat she gets huffy,
simply play on and lay on McDuffy. Brush up your Shakespeare, and they'll all kowtow.
Forsooth!
And they'll all kowtow.
Thinks thou!
And they'll all kowtow. We trow, and they'll all
And that's our show for today. I'm your host, Andrew Bowen, in for Jade Hindman. Thanks for listening to Midday Edition. Have a great day.
KPBS On Demand is supported by Paint Care, offering households and businesses in California more than 800 leftover paint drop-off sites for recycling. Quantities of 100-plus gallons of paint may qualify for a large volume pickup. Learn more at paintcare.org.